Kenny's back.
Yes. Yes. He's back.
Kenny Johnson, the author of The Last Hustle, A True Story, an excellent, outstanding spiritual autobiography, has returned to Many Rivers after too long an absence.
Yes.
And so we are delighted to have him back tonight to speak
about. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, and What to Do When Trouble Arrives at Your Doorstep was the title. Of course, we'll see where that takes us and where Kenny takes us. Welcome, Kenny.
Thank you so much. to see everybody. It's been a while. And when I chose that title, I think I just got back from Bali and a lot of things was up in my life. Troubles, problems. But I had no idea that the title would be coinciding with a story that I'm going to tell also. It's funny how these things work. So you come to a point where you realize that this is a real world, this is a real life, this is that consciousness is actually real. That it's not something that's hypothetical, it's not imaginary, that we are all connected to this oneness, and this oneness is alive and well in us, and it is running the show. Even that can start a problem right there, because there's this thing of free will. But it's my experience that something mysterious is running my life. It had to be in order to manifest me here today. And that something that's mysteriously running my life, I call consciousness, and its essence is love. And the way I access it is by having problems. That's a good one, ain't it? See, he thought I was going to say meditation, didn't he? Or prayer. That comes after the problem. But now I'm screwed up again. I need some help here. So. Once upon a time, there was this woman. She had two sons and two daughters-in-law. Every day, the sons and the daughter-in-law would heap vile and mean-spirited comments upon her. Until each day, she would become fatter and fatter with these words of anger, rage, and vindictiveness. It got so bad that she didn't know what to do. There was no one to talk to. I'm sure you can relate to where life gets so bad. You just think, where do I turn? Who do I talk to? I mean, maybe I can call a rabbi. Maybe I can call my daughter. Maybe I can call my son. But there's nobody to talk to. So that's where this woman was. She had no one she could turn to. So as we all know, once things get that bad, you just go into a state. And so she went into a state and she walked out the house, walking down the street, aimlessly looking for something or someone to talk to about her problems, about her two sons and daughters-in-law who were very mean to her for no reason. Then she saw this house, this abandoned house with no roof. She walked into the house and she stood in the middle of this empty abandoned house. And she says, I got to talk to somebody. I love this part. And so she started talking to the north wall. I have son number one says, I'm obese, I'm mean, I don't clean the house, I don't know what to do. And boom, the north wall fell down. And so she turned to the east wall and she says, and my other son, he talks about me day in and day out. As soon as I wake up, there he is, calling me nasty names. Boom! The east wall fall down. And so she said, wait a minute. And as she was doing it, she started losing weight, getting lighter. Then she talked to the south wall and told the south wall how mean her daughter-in-law was. And the south wall fell. She's back down to about 125 pounds, size 10. Now feeling good. And then she talked to the west wall and told it its problems, and that she stood in this rubble and this heap. She had lost all the weight. She was feeling good. She walked out of the house and went home. And how does that relate to you? How does that story land inside of you? We know it's all allegory. It's a legend. It's pointing to something else. That's what I love about stories. They can bring up things inside of us that we normally would not entertain. What came up inside me this morning as I was reading the story, and I knew that I was going to tell it this evening, was how the woman, which I would say I, have been in that place before, whereas I had no one to talk to, no one to tell my troubles to, and I just started speaking to this emptiness. And as the more I spoke, more I vocalized, more I prayed, the lighter I became. To the point of where I felt invigorated. And I could go back home. But when I went back home, I went back home with a new wisdom, with a new spirit, and empowered. I don't need anyone to talk to. I can just speak my troubles. And that which is everywhere hears and answers. That's what I got out of the story. What did you get? Yeah, you. Behind you there. The Grand Canyon.
Actually, first I
want to
say thank you, because I was just walking down. And I don't know if you remember me, but I was here a long time ago.
Yeah, I do remember you. Yeah. You were here with a girlfriend.
Yes. I've been to a couple of your things here.
Right. How you and your girlfriend doing? Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. About the story. You have to communicate that. There's something. If you hold it inside, it's not going anywhere, but worse.
When you hold it inside of you, how does it feel when you hold something inside of you?
Terrible.
Terrible, right.
Turn the stove on under it and watch it boil.
But then when you do something, when you do something just to address this terrible feeling, for a moment, that's what your experience for a moment when you're trying to do something.
Yeah, it's
release. Right. Now, how would you equate the two girls and the two boys? What would you say, where would that those voices be coming from? How would you look at that?
People who are in their own negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with the mother.
Right.
At all. Whatever you feel, you're going to share with the world.
Yeah, it's fine. I like that, because today I was talking and I was thinking about that, and I came to the same conclusion that people will share, they will tell you stuff you don't want to hear. Unsolicited advice. let me tell you how you should stand the hell, take care of that. And pretty soon you become full of something. unwanted material, knowledge, wisdom, whatever it may be, and then what do you do with it? You carry it around until you get tired of carrying it around. You can become depressed, you can become insane, a lot of things can happen to you. I work at a detox center, and I went to work last night, and I walked in, and I said, oh, it's going to be a quiet night tonight. About an hour and a half into this quiet night, here comes one of the clients. He comes, he walks out in the middle of the room. He just stood there. So I said, what's he doing? Then about 10 minutes later, he vanished and went back to the dorm. And another client says, Kenny, we got a problem. He says, that guy just went to the bathroom on himself in the middle of the dorm. I said, there goes that quiet, beautiful night. Because in a detox center, you have no idea what you're going to get. And so this guy had been filled with so much stuff, he didn't know what to do, but he was just standing in the middle of the floor and just relieved himself. And I'm saying, why me? Why the night?
Halloween,
trick or treat. That was my treat. And I thought about that. I said, this poor guy is filled with so much negative stuff, negative energy. I can only have compassion for him and be angry at him at the same time. And I see a lot of our clients are like that, and I see how I get filled up with stuff. And what do I do with it? How do I relieve myself? That's how he relieved himself. He stood in the middle of the floor and started. But how do we relieve ourselves?
Not that way.
Huh?
Not that way.
Not that way. See, but that shows you the degree of healthiness and unhealthiness in the world. Yes, go ahead.
The way I also heard the stories stuck up with me is that it's kind of like this, when you're stuck in something or you've got this negative stuff going on, the story is the woman took the risk to leave the situation and move into a place of unknown and take that risk to allow something else to happen.
Yes.
So she couldn't have done it while she was still in that environment.
That's right.
She had to step out of it.
That's right.
Yes.
That's a good story, isn't it? That's the first story I read today in a book, and I went on to read some more, and I kept coming back to that one. I said, this is a good story. I'll take this story. And I like what you're saying. I like how you said it, because when she went home empowered. She went home, and she spoke to what? She spoke to what we would call consciousness. And consciousness heard her, and it said, And gave her a confirmation. By the walls falling was confirmation that she was doing the right thing. Her practice. Oh boy, you like that, don't you? Her practice was working. Because we have meditation, yoga, acupuncture, whatever it may be. The practice was working. And she went home totally fulfilled and wise. And so we are assuming. Just when the sons and the daughter-in-law came at her again, she was armed with something now. You can't do that to me no more. Take that on down the road. Thank you. I like that. I like that. I really like that. Now, we're going to go a little deeper. How does that show up in your life now?
How does that
relate to your life? The story touched you.
I think that it just comes down to the simplistic sometimes of stepping out of my place where my head is going into all this negative place, and even putting myself in some other locality, if it's in a place of nature, if it's making a phone call.
Yes, yes.
It's taking action and not dwelling in that soup.
That's right. And also on this path of of spirituality, Buddhism, Hinduism, Advaita Vedanta. There's this thing where it's practice. What's your practice? What's your practice? Practice. You know, how often do you meditate? What do you do? A mantra? What about job? You know, and on prayer. Practice. I said that, you know, my life, you know, when I go to work, when trouble knocks on my door, that is my practice. Oh, my name is whatever. The problem is, my practice starts then. Okay, how am I going to, what am I going to do to be able to appease, assuage, or feed, or destroy whatever this demon, devil, or shaitan wants? Sometimes I might have to feed it. Come over in and have a cup of tea and some crackers, whatever. It might just want to have a conversation. Or we might have to go to the dude. Might have to fight a while. You know, I don't know. Depends. But that's my practice in real time. Or I might just say, okay, I'm going to give us more, and I'm just going to sit on the deck and just be still. That might be my practice. I don't know. That woman said, I can't sit here in meditation no longer. I got to get up and go. So she went and started praying, talking, speaking in tongues or whatever the case may be. I don't know. I wasn't there. But things shifted for her. So my practice, I was at an event about a month ago, and a gentleman walked up to me and says, Kenny, what's your practice? I said, man, just living life is my practice. I did a lot of yoga, a lot of meditating, but now I realize just living life is the practice. Because when something comes at me, okay, what can I do? My teachings tell me if I let it go, it's going to be okay. But for the longest, I'm going to hold on to it. I'm going to wrestle with it. I'm going to try to deny it. I'm going to do everything I can. You know, I'm going to say it's not even there. You know, I don't see nothing, you know. And it's the gorilla in the room. Until I say, okay, I let go. And the let go now in my life as a practice is like, okay, that's the let go. It's not letting go of all that comes my way. Oh, I have a headache. Let's let it go. Letting go of all that comes my way. That's not it. It's just like I'm wrestling with it, I'm struggling with it, and pretty soon, okay. Then here comes the answer. Here comes the solution. Because you really surrendered. You really let go. It wasn't a hypothetical or a, what's the word I want to use?
Mantra?
Yeah. It wasn't.
Gosh.
A thinking process. It was an actual, as I say, consciousness is real. It's waiting to you to solely surrender. And the surrender is like, okay, I give up. I let go. Okay, I'm not going to, I know I'm going down the wrong way. I'm not going to do that work anymore. I'm not going to do that. I'm done. Okay. Then, that you drop that. Then, this is how this is where I'm going. Because the universe is trying to get your attention to put you in a point in a certain direction. So my practice is life. It's actually waking up in the morning, putting on one shoe, putting on another shoe, you know, putting on a nice beautiful sweater, a nice pair of jeans, you know, comb my hair, brush my teeth, walking out the door, welcome. Sometimes I don't get out the door, trouble's already on the phone. Hey, come get your car. You know, hey, for that bill, for that telephone bill, whatever. Hey, send me that whatever case may be. You know, when sometimes you don't even have to get out of bed; it's a dream. Like, whoo, man, that was a wild dream. Man, I dreamed the five gorillas was coming at me. Phew, and I had to kill them all except for that one big pink one. You know, you know, because trouble is always at the door. Oh man. How you doing? How did that story land in you?
I heard the urgency. Part of it. And another way of interpreting the sons and daughters-in-law would be she had given rise to these people.
Yes. This
image of people, which could be, you know, voices in her head, judgments. Came from her, and that judgments married other judgments.
Ah, yeah. Oh, now you're really getting symbolic. Oh, now you're really getting deep. Man. Adam begat Seth. Seth begat Leah. Leah begat Ruth. Okay, I hear you. I follow you. I like that. That's cool. That's really good. I like that. There was already inside of her judgments. Mm-hmm. Now, this is bringing it closer to home, isn't it? It really is. Yes.
Just for me.
I like that. And so now, just these all judgments and these stories of these people that run around in their head, what do you do? What do you do?
Well, there would have to be some practice, to get outside of that, outside of believing in those judgments.
Yes.
Being trapped by them.
Mm-hmm.
Being in the house with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, as spiritual practitioners, Buddhists and Hindus and whatever the case may be, we normally do what? What are we?
We normally do what when?
I'll put it like this. We have like a meditation practice. We have like a prayer practice. We have these things in place. Mm-hmm. Do they always work for you? Or how do they work for you? How do they work? I put it like that.
They work to the degree that I'm committed to practice. Because sometimes when I'm practicing, it doesn't necessarily make me feel good.
Right.
I can feel more trapped than ever. But that's part of the process.
It is true.
Does that answer your question?
Oh, you did a good job. You did an amazing job. I'm glad we got it on tape. I like that way, because I thought about the same thing. Well, those could be just thoughts in her head that are beating her up, causing her to overeat, don't exercise, because we're speaking of getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, Now take me a little deeper. Okay, now those are thoughts that are beating her up. So we're not going to say she's slim and trim. So how would that getting fatter look to you from us?
Well,
internal.
Getting fatter would mean that she was getting more weighed down and heavier and maybe like literally fatter too.
But we say not though, because she was trimming.
Oh yeah, she was trimming. Yeah.
Right. So you see where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
I say almost levels. Each layer of fat is a level of defense. It takes her further and further from her essence.
I like that. Yeah, because you're in this core. We're in the center. And so how is it taking you further and further and further, increasing your distance
from yourself?
Right. And the more distant you are from yourself, hence the more suffering, more pain. And the way down is this depression. And they say, psychologists say, Marie-Louise von Franz say, once you experience depression, that's where the freedom is. Right next, let's say depression is actually what you want to experience to propel you to move. So when trouble knocks on your door, say, come on in, trouble. Let's have a conversation. What lessons are you going to teach me today? What's the medicine you're going to be dispensing today, Dr. Trouble? I like that. I like it moving away from the center. I love that one. That's a good one.
I think she might be protecting the center too.
Yeah, okay.
She's pushing all that out there so it can't reach her.
There.
From that
And we can call that denial. We can call that resistance. We can call that when you're keeping things, keeping everything at bay, at arm's length. Yeah.
So it can't hurt you as much.
Right. It can't hurt me. Because if we keep it out there, it can't hurt me. Yes. Did you have something to say?
Well, I just made a move.
I thought maybe you were going to say, yeah, I got something to say about that. Do you have any opinion about that?
Well, okay. What it got my attention in the story is the fact that it's her own family, the one that is getting in her face. It's her children and the daughters-in-law. And what happened is that for her, I like it in the story that she goes away and happened what it happened, the walls go down and she gets the confidence and the power back on herself and walk back home. And nothing is being said about the others because it's not about the others, it's about herself. So that's what it catch my attention, that sometimes in my life, even my beloveds are the ones that are telling me things, you know, my family or my best friends, maybe because they don't know, maybe because they're whatever in their own lives, you know, but it's not about them having to change. The story doesn't go there. It's in oneself.
Right.
That you get you get free, you get clean of all your fears or whatever, the way they make you feel because of that. It clears out for oneself. And then if you're strong there and confident in yourself, that's it. That's the end of the story. That's the end of the story for the woman. So that's what I like, you know. I got the fact that it's the family.
So now, what this beautiful young lady said is that's the end of the story. But what the author said, then she went home.
And then we want to know what happened.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Because we know that's not the end of the story.
No.
Because what's happening, it's going to start again.
First, is this her house, and they're living with her?
Yes.
So the end of the story might be that she goes home empowered and says, either shape up or get out.
That's right, that's right, that's right, that's right. So it's not the end of the story, it's just the beginning. Would you say it's beginning, young lady?
I say the end.
You say it's the end, okay. And
but not the story. It's the end of her story.
The end of her story. That story.
But that's like my own experience, you know.
Right.
So that I can only talk about that.
So, okay, now we're going to talk about our spiritual experience. This young lady has triggered a controversy. That is there an end?
No.
Is there an end?
No, it's like a transformation. Like you could say, we could like argue semantics. It's like Lars saying, like it's the end of her story. Like the story that like her illusion that she needs to get all caught up in what other people are saying about her, the grief or pain that people that she loves are talking smack about her, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's like the new story too of like, then she can be a transformed woman and make new decisions.
Right.
Even if that decision is as small as not changing the outside circumstances,
well,
and is knowing like she's all right.
Right.
No matter what's going on around her.
Right.
So then that could be like the new story, however you want to say it. But, and I say no, it's not the end of the story.
Because right.
When we die, who knows what's going to happen, you know what I'm saying? Like we'll be grass or trees or whatever comes next.
But it,
so
it
everything's going on.
Because what my experience is, my experience is that even though I've walked away from that and I went home, and I've been in this place of beauty, Satchitananda, joy, and relief and wisdom. Man, why was I even worried and, you know, and feeling good? Like, okay, no more. A week, a month, a day, an hour. Here I am again. We're starting again. We begin again. Would you not say that?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was trying to get at. You went back home and then you had to start.
Well, I was just like positioning in my place, in their place, in the moment.
Yes.
The story is. In this moment. That's what I was experiencing as I hear.
Okay, got it.
As I hear the story.
Okay, got it.
Like, in that, for that particular experience.
Yes.
With those judgments, with those problems, with all that.
Right.
In the moment.
Mm. Mm.
The story finished.
Mm.
The next moment, who knows?
Ah, beautiful, said. But in this moment, how are you feeling? You! In the blue shirt.
I'm feeling great.
Yeah.
You're not gonna sass me like that, are you?
Yeah. I already know what she's gonna tell you.
I want to say nice things to you.
As well.
And so you bring up a good, in this moment everything is perfect as it is. You stop and check in and look. This moment, right here, bring everything here to this moment and everything's perfect. It's, and this is about the core, moving away from the core. Coming back to the core right now as I sit here. I see things swirling around this peaceful, quiet place. But if I can just rest in the quiet space, take a few breaths, relax, and this is my practice throughout the day, somewhere, somehow, through the grace of meditating, talking to myself, there'll be short moments of just dropping. Maybe for a brief second, maybe for a minute, maybe, let me just go and sit down and just be still here. And just connect with this core, this center. Would you not say that that's your experience?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what it's like to get very spun
yeah.
out from far from that place. Mm-hmm.
it's real easy for me to do in the chaos of the outer world and the traffic and doors and the chaos and all the electronic. It's almost like we have to. I feel that so many of us are so removed on a constant basis, and we have to work.
Wow. Yes.
Giving
yes,
back
yes,
because
yes.
it's like we could be spiraled out.
Yes.
All day.
Mm. It's so funny that you mentioned electronics. I have an iPhone. I wake up with that thing and I go to sleep with the thing in the middle of the night, even look, check on it, make sure that's working.
What thing? Cell
phone?
iPhone.
Oh.
iPhone.
You wake up in the middle of the night?
Well, I just check it, make sure it's working.
That's beautiful.
I have never been so attached to anything.
I think it's good you put that down and relax.
And so the beauty of it is that I have programmed it for it to remind me to stop.
Oh, come on.
What would you do without it?
I'll say, beep, 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 beep. Breathe and pray. So it can be used for good. Technology.
Yeah. So interesting.
I'm just being real about it. You know, I'm attached.
Yeah. You know, so much for non-attachment.
Huh?
So much for non-attachment.
Yeah, so much for non-attachment. I'm attached to it.
How are you and Siri doing?
Huh?
So how are you and Siri doing?
You don't have that on your phone. Wow. It's the older model, right? Siri, the one where you talk to it and she tells you to talk back.
No, I haven't got that deep yet. Maybe I don't want to get that deep. I'll really be in trouble.
That's probably good.
What's up, Siri? How you doing today, baby? Kenny, that's fine. What do you need today, Kenny? No, I don't need to get. I got no problem with that. Yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah, but I, you know, speaking of attachment, you know, there's levels of attachment. That's attachment is attachment. You know, what I mean, attachment is attachment. It just is. Because the moment, here we go back. When you're in the center, when you're in the core, then you move just one measurement, whatever that is, the smallest measurement from the core. That's attachment that creates suffering. And I can see how my attachment to my phone causes me suffering. Because if I can't find it, I freak out. Yeah, shit. So I got a bad. I got a Jones.
And you know where it is right now?
I'm really can't wait for South Song to be over so I can find it. I'm just being real with you, you know what I'm saying? See, I'm the only one attached. Nobody else is attached. I'm just saying, because I have no idea what you're attached to. You may be not totally one of those guys who are totally not attached to anything but consciousness. I like that no.
Speaking truth, so that's why the walls
fell. Woo!
Yeah.
That was deep. How you get there, man? That's a deep brain you got over there.
Just
came up like that.
I
like that.
If I was attached, I guess
that's right. But I see what you're saying. That's right, because when she spoke,
she had built this house of lies out of what
her sons and daughter-in-law had said.
Yeah.
It was her house.
That's right. And this goes back
that's
to what
why
you...
it was a ruin, because it wasn't true.
Yeah. This goes back to saying these are just judging the thoughts and that's made up. Mm-hmm. So when you speak the truth, they reveal themselves for what they are. Emptiness, nothing.
No.
Right, nothing.
I think it's important that there's no roof, because if she tells the truth and the walls fall down and there's a roof, she's done.
That's right. Because then you can't get hurt. Man, we got a cool crew in here. I like that. Because it made sure there's no roof, because if she spoke to that wall and that wall pretty soon, bam.
But how come the west wall stayed standing?
None of them did.
Well,
all four fell down.
But when the first three fell, how come the last one is still standing?
Oh, well, but this is a story. This is my story. I can tell it the way I want to tell it.
When are you a contractor? I'm still stuck on that wall. I've been sitting here the whole time.
I love it. I like that, because all fell down in the rubble, and she was standing around a rubble of lies, and consciousness is not touched by any of that, and she's actually consciousness, which isn't touched by any of that. And as we're human beings, we are consciousness, and we can build up, get big, and get more, but we're not touched by any of this. Now we're back to that bite of a dime. We're back to non-dualism now. We're back to oneness. I always say this: if you just be in a room, but if you're conscious of who you are, sooner or later, guess what? You're going, the conversation or something will point you back to this truth. Just sit there. You don't even have to want to have a, just be there. This has been my experience. In some way, somehow, you may have a conversation about truth, or oneness, or love, or joy, or peace, just by being who you are. So it doesn't really matter where you go. If you show up as who you are, knowing who you are, all the other stuff, the superfluous conversations about the weather, the politics, and all that's going to fall away, then you're going to have a real conversation. It's been my experience. Today I was at the detox center this morning. This young lady came in. She was about 20-some years old, and she was speaking about her condition. It's so funny that she said some of the same things. She had about 5 bottles of pills there. I said, what do you take all these for? She said, well, this is Sarah, this is Mary, this is Sally, this is Jane. She had named all the pills.
Oh.
She said, and they all are a different aspect of my personality. I said, but guess what? None of those are you. We're just going back and forth, just having fun. And she says, what do you mean? And boom, I could take her straight to having a deeper conversation about what really matters in a matter of seconds without preaching to her. I said, well, once you start speaking to Sally and Mary and so-and-so, and really and bringing them into yourselves, then you won't need to take them anymore. She says, wow. She said, oh, okay. Let me think about that. Let me ponder that. Just give her something to turn her mind up on itself and let it start cannibalizing. Cannibalizing all that isn't real. Or, oh, what do you mean? Oh. after all the thinking, all the talking, what remains? Just like the house, what remains?
Rubble.
Rubble. And how do we look at that rubble? What is that rubble? He said it was lies. What do you call it? The rubble.
Lies sounds good, or the extraneous attachment things that we think are real but aren't. The illusions, perhaps.
You know, we all can take and call it whatever we want to call it, but it's your relation to it is how it, where it points you to, how it gets you back to the center. I say it's all the guru pointing toward itself, all consciousness pointing toward itself, to the core of what really matters. Because the first satsang or truth teaching 101 is that everything is one. There's nothing that's not one. That's the first rule. And the second rule is like unto it. Everything is one. There's nothing but this. And the third rule teaching is this: wherever you turn, there you are. And the fourth rule is that. What's the fourth rule? You are that. Everything is you. Everything is you. Everything. Everything is you. Everything is you. And everything is pointing toward you. In the dream therapy, the first thing you talk, every character in there is you. In your waking life, everything, everybody, if you really are doing the work, everything that's around you is you, teaching you, pointing towards you, guiding you. And this has been my experience, that when I have a problem, whatever, it's this opportunity for me to be grateful. Or to say, oh, thank you. I was going to work, it was raining, I pulled over to Safeway to get some coffee. Now my car never stops. I've come out of Safeway, boom. Wait. I said, this is not good news. And I got to be at work at 12, it's 12:05. And so I said, this is not pretty. Now I don't have time to look through my car, call AAA, and wait. I don't have time for that. So I said, I walked back into Safeway. I asked one of the guys, I said, could you help me get my car started? He looked at me, walked over to another lady, Safeway, and walked off. I said, well, I already know what that answer is. So I walked back out, and it was raining. I said, I looked up. Here comes a young man and his dad in an old Toyota. I walked up. The father speaks nothing. The father doesn't speak a lick of English. And so the young boy, I said, God help me get my car started. And the young boy, you know, translated to his dad. The dad just backed up, put up beside my car, got out the car, walked through the trunk, came over. He never said a word. Not a word. Got back in the car. I thanked him. They got it and drove off. Now, who was that? They didn't say nothing. They didn't say thank you. They didn't say. They were just very humble people. I said, wow. It's dark. It's back. I mean, most likely I would have kept on driving. If I see him, I ain't get robbed tonight, brother. No robbery tonight. But they stopped, helped me out. I said, wow. I was totally like, Man. Because I was in a pickle. And I had to just get started and go. And I had a time called AAA. And they were going to help me segue, and this guy just pulled out his attention. And I didn't even know they had cables. I didn't have any. He looked and see, he was digging around and digging. He came out with a sack. Ah, here you are. I said, man, who was this? And it drove on off. But that was myself helping me. Now, I always say that right next to your problem is a solution. You don't have to look too far at the problem. The solution's right there. You don't have to look, I mean, I was kind of like, I was kind of stressed, but not really stressed. Because I said, well, this got to rectify itself kind of quick here. Because I got to be at work. It's just boom, boom, boom. I always say that the problem and the solution are one and the same, right next to each other. And so the lesson I got from that was I was just grateful for that father and son. And I pray for them. May they be happy.
And then you have to pay it forward.
Right. So next, when you get stopped, I'm going to say, I can't wait to pay it forward. I like that paying it forward. Yes, yes.
I think that's what we're called on to
that's
do.
What we're called on to do. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Mm. That's right. We are. Mm. 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 How do we pay it forward? Without mumbling, without grumbling.
See somebody in trouble that you can give a hand to?
Yeah, just give it.
You just do it.
Give it. Silently, quietly, humbly. Thank you.
And maybe that's what that fellow was doing for you. Someone had done something good for him.
That was a teaching.
He wanted to help
somebody. That was the teaching right there. Yeah. That was the teaching right there. That's right. That's the teaching right there. Because, like we said, that woman standing in this rubble, and there was all, and I said, all everything was pointing toward oneness. It was pointed to the teaching right there. And I say, as I said earlier in this talk, that everything is real. And everything is connected. And this is a live, living, breathing spirit that's constantly communicating to us. Constantly teaching us. If we're paying attention. And even if we ain't paying attention, it's going to make you pay attention. Am I right?
A little trouble with the sons and the daughters-in-law.
Okay.
And I had a class recently where I read fairy tales for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And one story was similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
The woman lived with her son, or he lived with her, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And he met a beautiful woman in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this woman was actually a snake
who
took human form.
Right.
But the mother recognized this when she saw her. She said, son, you shouldn't marry this woman because she's really a snake.
Right.
But he was bewitched by the woman. He berated his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman moved into the house and was very cruel to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Very cruel. And she had many opportunities to turn against her son, but she never would.
Mm-hmm.
She always kept her love for her son, and she took the abuse. And eventually, she was given the opportunity to leave this situation and go to a wonderful place and live out her life there. And she said, no, I can't do that. I can't leave my son.
Mm-hmm.
And so that somehow caused a magic event to happen. And
what was the magic event?
Well, the snake woman think they produced a little rodent and let it run across the floor, and she couldn't resist it, and she slithered down there and got after the rodent.
Right.
The son saw her for what she was. And he begged forgiveness of his mother. I'm wondering if the daughters-in-law were perhaps the instigators in this story. Mm-hmm. I hate to think that the sons would abuse their mother.
What I love about this story, it's really close to home, man. I kind of like, I said, is she going there? I think she's going to go there, but but I'm going to wait and see.
Anyway, I think that we were supposed to describe what we got out of it.
That's right, that's right, that's right. That's what came up.
What I got out of it was an example of mother love.
Yes, right, mother's love. Right,
yeah,
right,
that a mother would never turn her back on her son, regardless.
Right. You know, and so for, and now we're going to speak about mother's love because I'm in an opportunity to experience the mother and daughter love right now. My beloved partner, she calls her mother every day. Her mother calls her, and they chat and chit, and they love each other. And I'm like, I'm so appreciative of that relationship. I love the relationship, how they just, you know, go back and forth. You know, and it's like, wow, it's good to see that. You know.
But in your book, you reconciled with your mother.
I reconciled, yeah.
Things are good now between you.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, once I finally really, really psychologically reconciled with my mother, now I'm able to have a healthy relationship with the woman. But I had to go, I wrote the book, then there still was a little, but now I went to a therapist and then, but then now all of a sudden, boom. Now I'm able to have a healthy relationship with the woman and love her and adore her for who she is and appreciate her relationship with others and not be jealous of the or be angry or whatever and to see where if my anger come up, I immediately do whatever I can to get back to the center, to the core of what really matters, and that's the love.
Yeah. Love is everything.
That's the core. And that's the core. And I see that between my partner and her mother, that there's so much love there, that love spills over into my life.
Of course it does.
Yes. I like that. It's amazing how a story like that triggers whatever needs to trigger in each person. And you don't know, you know. You just don't know. I mean, you just don't know. I haven't heard from the great one yet, so I'm waiting for him now.
We're all looking at you, Jim.
What?
The great one. Well, give me another. Something. You have one more thing to say. I know you do.
That's why everybody's looking at me.
That's not fun coming on the spot. I
know it. So the walls fall down, and she's standing in space. I think there's freedom there. But it's interesting to me that she decides to go back. Even if she's free, she decides to go back in freedom.
Even in her freedom. I'm going to ask you a question. Once you attain your freedom, your spiritual freedom, and the walls fell down, however you perceive that, what did you do? Once you had your awakening experience, whatever, what did you do? What was the next thing you did?
I thanked my teacher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I did.
That's fine.
Because it was all due to him.
Okay, and who are her teachers? Because your teacher brought the walls down through his shit, man. Like, you kept getting fuller and fuller. Boom.
who are her teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's such a thing as grace.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. No, when I had my awakening, I went back to my cell. I laid there and I meditated, and I went back to my fellow prisoners, the rapists, the child molesters. That's who I went to, you know, shared my experience with them. And I still go back, you know, in the form of prison work or, you know, some kind of way. I share my insights, whether they want to hear it or don't want to hear it. I still go back. I still give. You know.
Have you seen your work make any deep impression with any of these prisoners?
Yeah, yeah. I got one guy right now, Chatterbox. Chatterbox, every morning, it's unsolicited. He gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't know, some ungodly hour. And all of a sudden, I see a light go off in my room. And it's my cell phone. It's a text message. And it's Chatterbox saying, "God bless you, Kenny. May you be wrapped in grace." And he was in my prison program. Every morning I get that for him. I don't have to answer it. I don't have to say thank you, Chatter. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But every morning I get a text from him. This is unsolicited. "Thank you, Kenny." Because why? He's not on crack. He's not running down the streets. He's not trying to pimp women. You know, he got a job, he got a beautiful wife. And so he says, every morning he says, "Thank you." He comes back and gives me thanks. And I am so grateful for that.
So he's not in prison at this point?
Huh?
He's not in prison?
No, he was in my prison program. Matter of fact, he and I did a panel together not too long ago, didn't we, Pilar? We did a panel together out in Walnut Creek or something like that. Yeah, and he was on my panel, you know, talking about our experience. And now he's out, and every morning I get a text from him. See, what happens is that, as you know, as teachers and students and whatever the case may be, you know, you talk to a lot of people about the truth, but very few of them get it, then very few of them come back, go back, see, we're back home. To say, "I got it." To be thankful. So that's what I did. I mean, this was Chatterbox. He comes back to me. He said, "Thank you, Kenny. I appreciate this." And what I do, I go to my teacher, Ganguji. This weekend I'm going to be with her. And I say, "Thank you." So going back home can mean a lot of things. You know, so I go, I mean, I constantly go back. I don't care what her problem is, what she's doing in her life. I'm grateful because consciousness sent her into my life to set me free. So I'm grateful for God coming through her and touching her life and having her create a prison program just to come and get the precious few. And I was one of the precious few. And so I'm extremely grateful. So very few of us got it. There's a lot of us in the room, but very few got it. Then very few went back and said, "Thank you." And even in the Bible, Jesus said, I think he blessed two men or something like two or three men, and only one came back, or 10 people, and only one came back. He says, "To you much shall be given." Then he was blessed even more because he came back. And so it means a lot to my teacher, and it means a lot to me also. The Chatterbox would say, "Man, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be out here." Oh, man. That's to hear that, you know. It pumps the ego up, you know. You get attached to hearing sweet things, you know, but that's okay. But, you know, I see how it feels to my teacher when I go to her and says, "Thank you so much. You know, I really appreciate it." That means a lot. Like, oh, that keeps them going. That keeps
everybody going.
Yes, that's right. Because if nobody came back, you say, "Well, why am I doing this?" Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people hear these teachers speak, but how many really get it and come back and say, "Thank you, I got it, and I'm going to go out and share this with others." That's what really makes it work. That's why I like coming back to Many Rivers. I of all the places I've sat with and taught at and been, Many Rivers to me feels like home. And I'm sorry that I spaced you out when I first got back from Bali, but I was in a different universe.
Got it.
I'm back now. I'm attached.
You got an iPhone now.
I got an iPhone now. I'm attached now.
We'll have to learn how to text you, kid.
It's because it's always on. Yeah, but I'm extremely grateful for Many Rivers and space that you always provide, you know, for me to come and sit and ramble around whatever just come bouncing through this brain of mine. I really appreciate it, you know. I really, really, really appreciate it. So I bow to you. Come in.
Okay.
Have a seat.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to introduce the Awakened One to you. How you doing, Awakened One?
Great, how are you?
Oh, man, good. What's your name?
Bhuvan.
Bhuvan.
Uh-huh.
Where are you from?
I'm from the source.
See? I told you! Consciousness! Just had to come in and make an entrance to confirm that everything is all right. I didn't set this up. I swear to God, I didn't do tell him to come in. What time is it?
15:05.
I didn't say come in at 10 o'clock. I mean, no. 10 minutes to 9 and say you're from Source. Early in my talk, I said everything is related and that this is real. And consciousness showed up and this beautiful young man and says, I'm here. I'm here. I'm so good. I'm happy to see you.
Well, happy to see you too.
Man. But where are you? Okay, now I know you're from Sars. But Sars, where were you born at?
Born Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha? Oh, no, man. No. I hustled up and down. No, I cashed checks and I did all kind of crimes up in Omaha, Nebraska. And I'm very remorseful. I'm sorry. But
you've been to Omaha, Nebraska?
Yeah. Really? Oh my God, Omaha, Nebraska. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How long you been in California?
Since the 70s, late
70s. Whoa, man, wow. Oh. So what brought you here tonight, consciousness?
Just walking down the street.
Oh my God, this is really beautiful. This is beautiful. Do you know what the topic of the conversation was tonight?
No idea.
When trouble comes knocking on your door, what do you do? So when trouble comes knocking on your door, what do you do?
Breathe.
Man, I love it, man. You don't know who I am, do you?
No,
never met you before, have you? I haven't met you either, man. Wow. My name is, and since you don't know who I am, this is who I am.
Oh, cool.
Patrick, back there. Another man back there. It's a spiritual memoir about my life as a young man in the Midwest, Kansas City, Missouri, and getting caught up in a life of crime, and in and out of prison, hustling and all that kind of stuff. You know, finally, after 20 years of struggling, fighting, resisting consciousness, I had a spiritual awakening. By her.
Oh, okay.
This Gangaji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She came to prison. And my life changed. So So how did your life change? Where were you when consciousness came and knocked on your door?
Well, I met my guru when I was 17, so I'm now 58, so that was the beginning.
Who's your teacher?
Well, he's passed on now. His successor now.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in Kauai.
Kauai. But what was his name?
His name is Bodhidharma.
Bodhidharma. 17 years of age, huh?
That's when I started studying the mind and yoga and that type of stuff. Have you done a lot of traveling?
I live in Richmond right now. I just I'm like I said, from Kansas City, Missouri. My main work or my main mission in life is to share my spiritual experience with those incarcerated and also with people out here. So I do, it's like I have to wear two hats, you know.
That's funny. One of my mentors, who's always also passed on, he was in San Quentin when he started on a spiritual conference.